Before we get into today's episode of the Two Stripes Podcast, I just want to remind everybody where you can find the show. Head on over to Apple Podcasts and search the Two Stripes Podcast, and you can find every old episode there. And if you like the show, please be sure to comment, subscribe, leave a review, anything to help the show out. Also, you can go to soundcloud.com/twostripespod and find any new episodes and all of the old episodes of the show there as well. With that in mind, let's get into today's show. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the Two Stripes Podcast, the college football podcast that covers the whole country and all of Division I college football. My name is Colton Denning, and I am your host. Want to thank everybody for tuning into the show today, and think you're going to have fun listening to this one. If you look back at the 2016 season, there probably wasn't a program with a higher status that took as much of a dip as Oregon did. The Ducks go 4-8 last season, and basically everything imploded. The defense, which you thought couldn't get any worse after 2015, was one of the worst in the country, and at a lot of times felt like didn't even know how to play basic fundamental defensive football. Poor tackling was an issue. It felt like players didn't even really know what position that they were supposed to be in, and couldn't really react to what offenses were doing in the Pac-12, where you have a bevy of good offenses. That was obviously a problem. And I don't care how great your offense is, when you play like that defensively, there's really just no way of making that up and being able to salvage it. And the fallout, ultimately, was head coach Mark Helfrich losing his job, and in steps former USF coach Willie Taggart. Now, Taggart and his staff have had their fair share of issues during the spring, and we'll get into that. It was a hire that many, including myself, really liked. Taggart has had success at USF and his prior stop, Western Kentucky, before that, and I think he's going to do a really great job in Eugene. So to talk about the hiring of Willie Taggart in his first season at Oregon, as well as everything else going on with them heading into 2017, I got the opportunity to talk with Matt Takimoto. He is one of the senior editors of AddictedToQuack.com, and we broke down everything with the Oregon football program and why you should keep an eye out on the Ducks this season. I came into this interview very bullish on Oregon. I think a lot of people are selling them short this year after what happened last year, and I think talking with Matt, who obviously has more knowledge of what's going on at Oregon than I do, maybe lowered my expectations for them just a little bit with some of the depth issues they have, as well as their non-conference schedule and playing in the Pac-12 North. But I think overall, Oregon is going to be a much better team this season, and one that is positioned for success, not only this year, but in 2018, 2019, and beyond. I think that Willie Taggart was a great hire for them, and I think he's going to get them right back up in the mix of winning Pac-12 championships. I'm often wrong about college football, though. Most notably, how I picked this Oregon team to make the playoff last year, which, of course, did not happen. So, for some actual smart analysis on Oregon football and the program, let's get right into this week's interview with Matt Takimoto of AddictedToQuack.com. I'm now joined by one of the senior editors over at AddictedToQuack.com, Matt Takimoto. Matt, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing today, man?
Doing all right. Just starting to get that itch for football season. It's on the horizon.
Yeah, I feel like mid-June is that point where it kind of is like, okay, we have a couple of maybe weeks in some cases until fall ball starts, maybe a little longer, but once you hit July, it's like, it's just right there.
Yeah, and it's also sort of that lull in the sports season. NBA's over. It's really kind of just baseball to whet our appetites for sports.
Right, and even that, and like, I don't know how you are. Like, I love baseball, but it's just not enough.
I agree. I'm a big baseball fan. My Giants are also terrible this year, so that's not helping.
Dude, you're preaching to the choir. I'm a Padres fan, so we're terrible every single year. Speaking of a team, unfortunately, that was terrible last season, we're going to have to talk about last year with Oregon to kick this thing off. And I think the only real question that I can ask is, what happened last season?
I think it was the culmination of a lot of things. I think that the Chip Kelly-Mark Helfrich transition was a lot rockier and a lot less stable than we thought. I think, honestly, Marcus Mariota sort of hid a lot of the shortcomings in the program just because he was so freaking good. I think, you know, we were able to get to a national championship game in Helfrich's tenure, but there were a lot of sort of things with that team that Ohio State exposed in that championship game that weren't at that elite level. And then Helfrich just wasn't the coach to sustain it. And so once Mariota left, then we're left with a gaping hole at quarterback and a lot of holes other places.
Should we, and I guess I mean we in terms of people that aren't Oregon fans or don't watch Oregon, and maybe this was different for fans of the program or people inside the program coming into last year, but should this have been something we may have seen coming? Maybe not to that extent, but you mentioned kind of the rough transition between Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich, and then not finding really a true long-term replacement for Marcus Mariota. They went the transfer route 2 straight years, and Vernon Adams was a very good quarterback in the year that he played, but it didn't seem like they had any sort of long-term stability. And then you add that with the defense falling off a cliff in 2015, hiring Brady Hoke, which in and of itself was kind of a questionable move. Did fans ever really think that something like that was possible? Maybe not going 4-8, but that last year was going to be a little bit of a dip?
There were definitely some signs. I think the whole 2016 season the 2015 season rather was there were some definite moments when we went, this doesn't look like the Oregon we're used to. I mean, we had that was a 62-20 loss at home to Utah, you know, that just when Oregon lost under Chip Kelly, we didn't lose badly. You know, we lost by a score or two. We lost because Chip got stubborn and wouldn't stop running a play that wasn't working. Or we lost because somebody played out of their mind. You know, it wasn't that sense where we just got beat in every facet of the game like that Utah game. So that was really sort of the canary in the coal mine for the downfall of the program. I didn't think it would be so steep, and I don't think anybody thought it would be so steep. But as we heard coming out of the program after Mark Helfrich was fired, that there were some pretty major systemic issues and some pretty big program culture issues that really exacerbated that downfall.
On that subject, Willie Taggart comes in from USF, also had success as head coach at Western Kentucky before going to South Florida. So he comes in, and has the big discussion been about fixing the culture and kind of getting back to that identity that Oregon had under Chip Kelly and even previous coaches before him? And even if it isn't the same identity, just an identity that they can lean on that they may have lost.
I think Willie Taggart was right on in the way that he sort of attacked the beginning of this job in revamping that culture of in revamping that sort of expectation of hard work really being the driver of playing time and success at Oregon. You know, we saw under Chip Kelly there'd be different starters week to week based primarily on how the guys played in practice the week before and who was working the hardest and who really deserved that start on Saturday. That wasn't the case under Mark Helfrich. And so, you know, Willie Taggart really came in and attacked that and came in with a lot of energy. I mean, to the point where we ended up with a few guys getting rhabdo because they were working too hard. And I think the other thing that Willie Taggart really saw as a deficiency that he came in and attacked was recruiting. That really the recruiting rankings and the recruits that were coming in really started to fall off under Mark Helfrich. You know, Chip Kelly abhorred recruiting and he hated recruiting, but he understood that it was how you succeed as a program and he did it. And I think Helfrich just, you know, he's a nice guy, but he wasn't a very exciting person and wasn't a very good salesman. And Willie Taggart really came in. You know, Oregon finished with a top 20 recruiting class in 2017, and he salvaged what was a terrible recruiting class back in November, December. And 2018's looking really, really good too. So on those two fronts, he's come in really strong.
How nice has it been for the last couple of months that things have been quiet after, like you said, the Rabdo thing? There was the scuffle between Taggart and the local writer after that, and then there was the DUI arrest with one of the assistant coaches and another one. Has it been nice to just kind of have no news on that front, especially after what many people thought was such a great hire?
Yeah, it has been very nice having no news or very mundane news. You know, we saw a lot of big news under Chip Kelly, and so we sort of got used to that, and so having a little bit of calm right now is kind of an encouraging thing.
Getting to the schematics of what Willie Taggart likes to do, the last couple of seasons, USF had a very explosive offense, especially on the ground with quarterback Quentin Flowers and running back Marlon Mack. How much has he said, or did he say in spring ball, if at all, that Oregon is going to have that same identity of a power rush game, one that runs the quarterback, one that tries to generate those explosive plays on the ground like we saw a lot with Oregon under Chip Kelly and even in Mark Helfrich's early years?
I mean, we've seen in Willie Taggart's history as a head coach his adaptability. You know, I think at Western Kentucky, they ran a lot of West Coast stuff. And when he got to USF, that was his identity as an offensive mind. But then he noticed, hey, I've got all this speed, so let's do something with it. And we saw a big jump from year one to year two with USF in terms of their offensive output. And he's coming in with a ton of offensive talent. So to me, it feels like a situation where Taggart's going to be able to come in and look at all these pieces and go, okay, how are we best going to put points on the board? And, you know, his assistant hires have been really knockouts as well, bringing in Marcus Arroyo, bringing in Mario Cristobal. And so I think there's a lot of very, very smart people on the job who are going to be able to take what Oregon does and what Oregon has been doing and make it even more efficient and more explosive, hopefully.
And those offensive coaches are going to have an incredible weapon at their disposal in running back Royce Freeman, who comes back for his senior year. I don't know if people around the country forgot how good this dude is. He was banged up last year with 1,300 yards this season, which is, I think, pretty plausible, especially given the way that this offense, if he runs it the same way he did at USF, operates. He could be in the top 10 all time in NCAA Division I rushing. How was his progress coming back in spring, and how big of a season do you expect Royce Freeman to have, especially in this new offense?
I mean, from all we've seen, he's looking a lot better. Yeah, he was dealing with a lot of nagging injuries last year that just, you know, he tried to gut it out, but you could tell in his tape from 2015 to 2016, he just didn't have that explosiveness. He didn't have that first step that he had in 2015. And if he's got those things back, like, he'll be back to being, you know, a fringe Heisman candidate, and somebody that's going to garner some national attention. And the depth behind him with Tony Brooks James and with Taj Griffin is going to be really, really strong as well. Tony Brooks James is a guy that I personally like a lot, and he did very, very well when Freeman was hampered with injuries last year.
Quarterback Justin Herbert comes back. And what's it like for Oregon fans to finally have some stability at quarterback?
I mean, the second half of the year last year was a lot of fun just because, you know, we knew we were in the tank and we knew we were going to youth. And so we're like, okay, let's see what this Herbert kid's got. And then he went out and threw for, I think, 5 or 6 touchdowns against Cal in a mess of a game that was just really, really fun to watch. It was a terrible football game.
That was a crazy game.
It was so fun. I was at that game. It was so fun to watch and so bad. And then he, you know, pulled out that last second win at Utah, which really was the signature win of the season last year with that last second throw to Carrington in the corner. He's got a lot of energy. The team sees him as a natural leader, and he really stepped up even last year as a freshman, as somebody who is looked up to and is a role model and someone that the rest of the team looks to for guidance. And so it's a great thing to have in a quarterback. And I think year two of the Justin Herbert era, we're very excited for.
Do you think that those two guys, Herbert and Freeman, are the most important parts of the transition from Helfrich to Willie Taggart, because I know he basically re-recruited Royce Freeman to come back to the program. And then with Herbert back, Oregon for the first time in 3 years doesn't have to worry about trying to find somebody else.
Yeah, and I think the offensive line stability is going to be enormous as well. Last year, Oregon's offensive line was so young and so inexperienced. And next year, we've got all of our starters coming back. We've got, four of our five starters coming back. We've got, you know, Jake Hansen's a guy I like a lot. Calvin Throckmorton's a guy I like a lot, who were both honorable mention all conference last year. And, you know, and that is going to be one thing, one really big thing that's going to ease the transition, is having stability and having experience at the offensive line.
Where do you think that Justin Herbert needs to improve the most in his game going into his basically first full season as a starter?
I think that, you know, being able to feel that pressure and just let the game slow down. There were moments, especially in that USC game last year, where he got those freshman happy feet, and he was kind of a first option and then try and make a play with his legs guy at times. And so really sort of having that mantle as QB1 from spring on, I think is going to help him a lot. And just being, you know, having a second year at the college level, I think is going to be a big thing for him. But he's got all the natural talents. He throws a great short to medium ball. His deep ball is progressing. So I'm excited to see what he's got in year two.
So living in Boulder, I got the chance to see up close and personal some of the amazing things that new defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt did with the CU defense, which was atrocious before he took it over. And now he heads up to Oregon. And it seems like so many of their problems on defense the last two seasons have just been basic fundamental stuff, tackling, being in the right position. How much of the talk during spring and in the offseason has just been kind of focusing on the fundamentals of that defense? Because it's not like they don't have talent.
It's been a lot of the talk, just really getting back to basics, I think, with from Nick Aliotti retiring and then 2 years of Don Pelham, which third and Pelham was a phrase that
yes,
coined
very
on,
much
on
ATQ, so.
And we were so sick of third and Pelham. And then Brady Hoke he gave us, you know, really nothing. It was a very indifferent defense last year. The recruiting deficiencies really hurt us on the defensive end the most. I think the instability at coordinator and then Helfrich just not being a great recruiter in general was a big miss. And so there is a bit of a talent deficiency on the defensive end. And so, you know, really getting back to basics, guys like Troy Dye and Brendan Schooler stepping up last year and becoming leaders on that defense was big. And so with a year of growth again, and a year of last year being really a wash and just playing the young guys and seeing what they've got, there's the pieces are there for a competent defense. I wouldn't go as far as to say a good defense yet, but the pieces are there for a competent defense.
How many Pepsis do you think Jim Leavitt drank this offseason?
A day or total?
A day and first, what do you think the daily amount is, and then total wise?
I mean, it's probably somewhere between, you know, 4 and 6 would be a reasonable estimate. 12 on a double day? I don't know.
It's hard to see why coaches are so unhealthy. You mentioned the defense just getting to a competent place. Like, in terms of S&P plus-wise, what do you think is the most realistic growth for improvement? Where do you think that they can finish? Do you think they can finish in the 60s as a middle-of-the-pack defense? And just having a competent defense, I feel like it's such an easy question or a broad question, but how much does that just help the team overall to just have a defense that can actually get off the field?
Well, it's huge. I mean, and especially, you know, the defense and the offense work hand in hand with the tempo, because if the offense is going three and out, the already taxed defense is just getting more and more tired. And the defense, you know, works well. And when Chip Kelly's defenses were at their best, they were being aggressive. They were forcing turnovers and really adding to the momentum of an already potent offense. So in terms of just S&P plus, I'd love to see somewhere near the middle. I don't even need to be in the top half, just somewhere near the middle, somewhere 70 or up, you know, just to give a little bit of peace of mind. I feel like that means we're getting off the field at times. We're holding teams to a winnable level of points. I don't think this is going to be a defense that's going to go out and win you a game by themselves for at least a couple of years. But yeah, somewhere in the 60 to 80 range would be tremendous.
I remember maybe the most defining thing, at least for me, about those Oregon teams outside of the tempo and the jerseys and the stuff that people like to talk about with the Chip Kelly era was how they were, you know, they would go down and score and then the defense would take the field and they would immediately get a turnover and score again. And that seems like that is maybe not Willie Taggart's ideal, but that's kind of where they want to get back to.
I think that is where they want to get back to. You kind of have to have the guys to go out and do that. And so, and we saw that with Levitt's first year at Colorado, where they were very bend but don't break it just because they didn't have a whole lot to work with. So we'll probably still see a more conservative defense next year, but I would love to eventually get back to being a really aggressive defense.
One of those guys they for sure have to work with is Troy Dye. And in his freshman season, he stood out with over 70 tackles, 13 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. What did they talk about this offseason? Is there going to be different ways that they're going to use him? Is it going to be more of a hybrid? Is he going to be a more hybrid type of player, or is it going to kind of be what they did with him last season?
I think it's, you know, I think just the way he, because, you know, his main thing is just grit, and he's going to go out and out football everybody. You know, I think they're going to try and move him around a little bit. I'm not, you know, 100% sure on necessarily specific schemes or specific ways they're going to use him. We didn't get to see a whole lot of that. It was pretty milquetoast in the spring game. But to be able to have a guy like that that can go out and make a play from multiple avenues is definitely something that Jim Levitt's going to try and use to their advantage.
After a season where Washington wins the conference, they go to the playoff, and then Stanford has another 10-win season, with Oregon kind of not starting from scratch but just starting a new regime, what do you think their place in the Pac-12 North is right now? Is it a clear third, or do you think that this is the type of season where they can kind of sneak up and, whether it's Washington or Stanford, surpass one of those teams and finish second in the Pac-12 North?
I think it would take a lot to crack the top two. Washington's so good right now. Jake Browning is nonsense good, and it's very, very upsetting. and then Stanford is Stanford, and they're going to be Stanford until David Shaw leaves, and then they'll probably still be Stanford after that. I think third in the Pac-12 is attainable. Third in the Pac-12 North, I should say, is attainable. I mean, Washington State's a good team too. I definitely think they're in a better place right now than Cal. Cal's a mess. And I think that they lost to Oregon State last year, but they definitely have more talent than Oregon State. So with some coaching stability, they should be better than the Beavers this year too. So in that third, fourth range, you know, third in the Pac-12 North would be encouraging.
I feel like people really sell the Oregon-Washington rivalry short for how much hatred there is between those two fan bases.
Yes, it is. It is intense. The Civil War gets a lot of the press, but it's very much with Oregon State, it's very much a big brother, little brother kind of thing. And, you know, there's so many families that stay in Oregon and go to school in Oregon. And so you've got Ducks and Beavers and in families all the time. And it's more of a friendly rivalry. Oregon Washington is just hate. And that stems from a lot of things on the football field, sort of the, you know, the Don James era and them winning their national title and then holding it over us. And Oregon being so bad for so long. Kenny Wheaton's pick in 1994 leading, you know, spurring the Ducks to their first Rose Bowl in forever was against Washington. And then Oregon just rattled off this huge streak against the Huskies, and Washington got back at us in fine style by dropping 70 on us last year. So, yeah, there's a lot of hate. Addicted to Quack, we call it Hate Week. And, you know, happy I Hate Washington Day is every day. And, yeah, there's some vitriol there for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say the Washington-Oregon rivalry seems super less cordial than a rivalry called the Civil War, which is crazy, but it's definitely something to where, you know, since CU has joined the Pac-12 and interacting more with Pac-12 fan bases and fans, that I've gotten to know, like, wow, these schools really hate each other. And for Oregon fans, you got, Oregon went on that really long streak of beating them, and it seemed like that hatred never really dimmed down. And after last season, I can't imagine that it'll keep going any further.
Absolutely. I feel like the Washington hatred for Oregon dipped a little bit because Washington just dominated the rivalry for so long, and then the last 20 years when Oregon's really risen to being a football power, they're annoyed at us. They hate us again. It's great.
Looking at the 2017 schedule, got non-conference games versus Southern Utah, Nebraska, at Wyoming. The Nebraska game, I feel like, even with a new regime, has to be payback because Oregon shouldn't have lost that game last year. And then at Wyoming is a game where a lot of pundits seem to be talking about that given Wyoming's quarterback situation with Allen there possibly being a first-round pick as one that Oregon could lose. How do you feel about that non-conference slate, and do you think that going 3-0 is a must, or is 2-1 all right?
I think 2-1's all right. I'm not sure which one is would be better versus either Nebraska or Wyoming. Because yeah, that game at Wyoming is tricky and sneaky and scary. Because that's a game we could definitely lose. First road game of the year. Wyoming's they've got some talent and they can put some points up. And so on a defense that's going to be only three games in it. That's a sneaky game. Yeah, I think 2-1's okay. Especially looking ahead to the first two Pac-12 games at Arizona State and at home against Cal. You know, I think if there's anything less than 3-2 out of those first five, it's a problem. 3-2's okay. 4-1, the Ducks could conceivably, best case scenario, they could be 5-0 heading into that Washington State game if they come out blazing.
So what do you think would be a successful season for Willie Taggart's first year in Eugene?
You know, we've seen Willie Taggart at Western Kentucky and at South Florida. Year one in the Willie Taggart era has consistently been ugly. He went 2-10 in his first seasons at both places. I don't think that the Oregon boosters are going to have patience for a 2-10. I think there's too much talent for a 2-10. You know, I think a bowl game is acceptable. A bowl game is fine. You're looking at the schedule, it actually sets up kind of nicely to go, you know, to put up like a 7-5, maybe an 8-4. Our three toughest conference games at Stanford, at UCLA, at Washington, they're all on the road. We're all going to get smoked in those, but they're all on the road and they're fine. We've got winnable games at home. You know, we should beat Cal. We should beat Arizona. We should beat Oregon State. You know, Utah and Washington State, I think those are going to sort of be the litmus test games as well as that early test against Nebraska. So depending on how those three games fall, I think it could be anywhere between, you know, 6-6 to 8-4 in there, which I think would be a really, really nice start to the Willie Taggart era.
That's interesting you say that, because coming into this, when I was doing reading on Oregon and looking at who's coming back and how kind of Taggart coaches with the personnel that he has, I felt like, man, 8-4, possibly if they're able to steal that UCLA game, 9-3 would be on the table. Would Oregon fans, based off of what you're saying, would just be like completely over the moon if they went 9-3, right?
Oh, we'd love it. 9-3 would be incredible, I think. Considering that my one hang-up is just how uncertain and how still really behind that defense is going to be. And the offense has a ton of weapons and a ton of talent. But if there's hiccups in the offense, the defense isn't really ready to pick it up. And like I said, the defense isn't really ready to go out and win you a game. So just looking at that, you know, looking at teams that have really good defenses and can shut down an offense, like those games can get scary if the offense isn't still humming.
Well, if you want to keep up with any of Oregon's football season and how Willie Taggart does in his first year, you should go to addictedtoquack.com. Head there, not only just for football coverage all season, but especially during Hate Week against Washington, because I guarantee that you're going to see some fun things. You can also follow them on Twitter, at AddictedToQuack, and you can follow Matt on Twitter, at Takimoto23x. That's TAKIMOTO23x. Matt, I appreciate you joining the show and dropping some knowledge on Oregon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm telling y'all, Royce Freeman is going to have a monster season. If he has over 1,300 yards rushing, which if he stays healthy, I think is almost a given in this offense with how Willie Taggart and his staff like to use their running backs, he's going to end up in the top 10 all-time in FBS rushing leaders. He's going to pass LaDainian Tomlinson, and he could conceivably get up into the top 7 or 8 with 1,500 or 1,600 yards. So something to look out for, and I know that that's probably the main thing that I'm watching for as Oregon progresses throughout their season Freeman is definitely one of my favorite players to watch in college football when he's at full strength. But I think Oregon overall should be fun to keep an eye on and see if they can regain some of that swagger that they've lost over the past 2 years. Again, make sure to keep up with all Oregon stuff over at addictedtoquack.com and follow them on Twitter at addictedtoquack, and then find all of Matt's work on Twitter at Takimoto23X. That's it for today's show. Want to thank everybody for listening. If you're a first-time listener, I very much appreciate it. And if you like the show, be sure to head on over to Apple Podcasts, search the Two Stripes Podcast, and subscribe and leave a review. And head over to soundcloud.com/twostripespod as well to find this episode and all other episodes of the Two Stripes Podcast. Hope everybody has a fantastic start to their week. I will be back with another episode later on this week, so be on the lookout for that. But until then, my name is Colton Denning, and this is the Two Stripes Podcast.